Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place, and do anything that you want to do. But honey, lay off of my shoes.
I'm Andy Roberts, and we are in Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas.
You're not a local girl, right?
I'm not a local girl.
So this is a new incarnation for you.
It is. I was born in Texas.
Whereabouts?
And Tyler, about an hour and a half out of Dallas, and spent 25 years in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Before coming to Hot Springs. But I grew up coming here.
Were you in music, or what did you do?
Yes, I was in the music industry for a long time, and then got into real estate. And was in real estate for years there, and then decided to buy an old 1950s motor court in Hot Springs.
When did you buy this?
Bought it in 2016, my 40th birthday. Took us about 6 months to buy it because we had owners that only communicated via snail mail.
Oh, God.
And so was boarded up and closed down for about 10 years before we got it. Spent a year in renovation. Opened in 2017, so we're coming up on our 10th anniversary.
What did you have to do to rebirth it and renovate?
We did everything to rebirth it because it was not in bad shape, but it was so dated that, you know, nobody would have stayed here. You know, $30 a night rooms were not, you know, on our agenda, but we basically gutted the entire building. We kept all the original tile. We tried to do as much preservation. Mm-hmm. It's on the National Historic Register, and so we did a really sensitive, you know, restoration. Didn't do a lot to the outside, kept everything as original as we could.
And you kept the original name?
Kept the original name from 1951, which is Cottage Court. Just pretty much did everything new in rooms and gave it a new life. We kept all the tile, all the really cool colored tile from the 50s and stuff like that. And
that's really cool.
Yeah.
So what got you here?
So growing up in Texas, I came here with family. You know, we'd come on short weekend trips because it's only, you know, it's about 4 hours, four and a half hours from Dallas. So we'd come over on the weekends, and since I was a kid, so I just always remembered coming.
This was your getaway.
Yeah, it was our quick getaway. So I remembered coming here, and when I got older and could drive, you know, and I was like, oh, I want to go back to Hot Springs one day. And And then when I moved to Nashville, of course, I would drive back and forth to Texas to go home and visit. And so I just came through here at one point and started kind of making this my little detour again. Mm-hmm. I've always gravitated here.
This feels like home to you.
It does. I have a friend who told me, she said, oh, I knew 20 years ago you'd live in Hot Springs one day. So it wasn't any big surprise, I think, when I ended up coming down here or buying a place here. I didn't come here full time for a while, but... So, yeah, it's always been kind of a second home and a place that I've visited frequently.
That's really cool. So where do you go from here? Fine tooth, comb it, landscape?
Yeah, so bought the motel, got things running here. And like I said, we're coming up on 10 years. Last year, we were the number 4 roadside motel in USA Today's on their top 10, their 10 best list. And so we were the only motel in Arkansas that was recognized, which was cool.
Wow, that's incredible. Why do you think that is? Why did you rise to the top of the heap?
You know, we've been really lucky that we've had a lot of guests that appreciate this style of architecture. Mm-hmm. And I just had somebody tell me the other day that they love that you can drive up and you park right by your door and you just take your stuff in and you don't have to go, you know, walk down long corridors and stay in some big place. They like that it's small and it's, you know, kind of got a really comfortable feel to it. And they said it's just very convenient, and they never understood why these places just kind of went out, you know. And so I think a lot of people appreciate the history of the motor courts, and a lot of people like me have memories of, you know, staying at these places when they were kids.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a big draw for us. And we were also one of the, you know, we were one of the first places on Park Avenue to actually do a restoration versus being like a longer term. You know how a lot of the motels across the country have turned into like more long term.
Yeah, monthly.
Monthly and weekly stays for people. And so we were one of the first to come back and resurrect as as a roadside motel. Mm-hmm. And so that's been fun, and it's made us kind of special in Hot Springs. There's a few others that were here too, but mm-hmm. they're not in this area. They're right. just kind of one's downtown. There's another one on the other side of town, and so there's a few of us that have remained, but I think they're just rare, and it's just something that in the age of when Airbnb got really and started getting really popular, mm-hmm. I think people were just looking for a different stay besides going to stay at big chains.
Mm-hmm. So again. What's on your horizon?
So I'm about to start a restoration of another motor court, which is also in Hot Springs National Park. It is a completely different style architecturally, so really looking forward to that.
More same of a, era, same vintage.
1930s. This is 1950s. Wow. So we're going back to mid-30s mm-hmm. and more of like a craftsman style. It's got a big main house with five little cottages attached with some garages, which are going to be cool artisan spaces, we're mm-hmm. hoping.
Nice.
And and then I've got a couple of other things brewing, a couple of other historic projects that are on the agenda that are coming together mm-hmm. right now. So.
And any more music in your world?
Not in a work context. just for fun. Yeah, so yeah. always music for fun. So.
That's so cool.
Hot Springs is amazing. It's full of lore and all of these, crazy stories that have, been passed down through the years. And it's one of the coolest national parks in the South, especially because we've been told it's one of the only national parks, if not the only one, where the town is actually a part of the national park.
Yeah.
It's a really cool, interesting place, lots of characters, and I love a good character.
To learn more about your world, where would you take us? Website?
For the motel, Cottage Court. We're actually Dame Fortune's Cottage Court, mm-hmm. and that's staydamefortune.com. And you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at the same.
Same.
Yep. I'm Andy Roberts.
Andy Tom Wilmer, reporting from Little Rock, Arkansas. We'll see you here. Thank you so much.
Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out the barrel, we've got the blues on the run.
Here we are in Hot Springs. I was moving here and I found out about a famous hot spring water mm-hmm. you could drink, and I found out about these former abandoned bathhouses that would be available for small businesses to operate in. Just took it from there. Said, well, is it possible to do this? And mm-hmm. turns out it was.
So kind of a perfect storm in a way. You made a proposal to the United States government, right?
Yeah, I had to convince the National Park Service to let me make alcohol on federal property.
Mm-hmm. And how was that process? How did that work out?
It was a lengthy process, and it was pretty difficult, but I describe it as a series of doors opening. The first door was, is this even possible to do? And the answer was yes. Here's how. Our funky little national park, our quirky little national park, has a historic leasing program that they developed about 20 years ago for this exact purpose. So there was a way for someone like me to come along and propose an idea, submit it in writing, an 80-page proposal, not a small piece of writing, and they would review it and eventually awarded me the lease, and we signed the lease. So
that was all in tandem, you discovering that the Superior Bathhouse was available, right? And that's what kind of put your vision together.
Yeah, discovering that the bathhouse was available and that the only way to use the water was to operate in a bathhouse. The national park was formed here to protect this natural resource for the people of the United States, and you're not allowed to run a pipe to an offsite facility or pull up a tanker truck and take the water and just go make beer somewhere else. They wanted to make sure that if they were going to provide the water, that I would be providing a service to the park as well, which is to have an amenity for the visitors, which is our brew pub and restaurant. It's a way for visitors to experience the water in a different way, a novel way.
Talk to us a little bit more about the bathhouse and that restoration project. What was here? What did you have to do to turn it around?
The bathhouse had been, quote unquote, stabilized in about 2005 by the National Park Service. And what stabilized meant was they pulled out the old fixtures, they installed some rudimentary HVAC, replaced the roof, sprinkler system, and things like lead and asbestos abatement. Some of the really, really tough things were handled, but the building was, like I said, a blank slate.
But it had good bones, right?
It has very good bones, but it was, you know, ready for me to transform it into our brewery and restaurant. The park was very permissive of what we needed to do, because with any adaptive reuse project, which is what this is, we're turning a former bathhouse into a brewery. Pretty much anyone would agree that you take a building built 100 years ago and you have to bring it up to some modern standards like safety, fire escapes, fire alarm systems, yeah, elevators, modern plumbing. You know, all those are very important. So I was allowed to do all those things. Mm-hmm. There were some things that we were not allowed to do. For example, most breweries have a very large opening into the brewery to move tanks in and out and move pallets in and out. We do not have that luxury, so.
Because of historic preservation, you have to keep that.
Historic preservation, yeah. They did not want me to knock a 12 by 12 foot hole in the side and put a, you know, roll up garage door, right, like you might see in a more industrial brewery. We had to get creative over the years to get 48 inch diameter tanks into a historic building. Usually involves removing windows and rolling tanks in on what I call a roller coaster. We literally built a plywood and lumber skate ramp from the front sidewalk all the way into the brewery and rolled all of our equipment in on its side. So
really,
we had to get creative with the historic building, but we got it. Here it is.
Talk to us about your iconic beers that people associated with you when you started and where you've gone, how you've evolved.
How we've evolved over time. That's a really good question. You know, when I first was opening this business, I didn't really expect the success or popularity we would reach. I mean, I'm not bragging, but the city of Hot Springs and our national park has really garnished national attention over the years. So, you know, 15 years ago when I was first starting, and we've been open for 13 years, things were very slow down here, and I had a much smaller vision of what we would be doing. So we had very minimal food, just some snacks and, you know, 18 beers on tap. But as the word started to get out about Hot Springs and about our brewery, I had to expand what I thought we would be doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this place has evolved over the years into a, for example, our very minimal food we opened with. Now we have a full-on restaurant serving lunch and dinner 6 days a week with, wow, table service and everything like that. That's, you know, like having a big baby grow up. And beer-wise,
I mean, you didn't, you know, have a clue that was going to happen.
I did not. You know, maybe it's a self-esteem issue, but when you're opening a business, you think, man, I hope this is going to work.
Right.
You know, and you kind of think, well, it would be great. It would be great if it, you know, if it did X. Mm-hmm. And then 10 years later, you're doing X, Y, and Z. It's an amazing growing experience, and it does make you tired as a business owner. But, you know, there's nothing more satisfying than seeing a vision you had years ago come to fruition and grow into its own little beast that, mm-hmm, needs, you know, sometimes the superior tells me what it needs, right, instead of the other way around. And it's a great feeling.
Talk to us about when you first opened, what was your iconic beer that you were serving?
Well, when we very first opened, mm-hmm, we weren't even brewing yet. It took us an extra 18 months or so to build the brewery itself after we opened. So we were serving lots of craft beers and guest beers from other regional breweries. But I learned during that time what styles of beer people like.
So it's probably a good thing.
We could call it a practice. It doesn't, mm-hmm, hurt to have some practice before, yeah, you know, do the big leagues. But, you know, one thing I learned about beer and customers is that, you know, you really have to offer something for everybody if you can. And that's part of my philosophy. I'm a beer nerd, but I'm not a beer snob. So, you know, I appreciate the weirdest and wildest and hoppiest, most bitter, darkest, mm-hmm, beers you can give me. But I also realize that, you know, as a business owner, I need to have something that my customers will appreciate too. And especially in a national park, we have people from all walks of life and all beer tastes coming, not just to come to a brewery, but they, mm-hmm, want to come have lunch and they want to taste the spring water in a different way. So I've been very careful over the years to make sure that we offer a whole variety of beers. We have our yellow fizzy beers, I call them, and we have our super hoppy double IPAs and everything in between. Darks, sours, wild yeast beers. We even make a seltzer. I don't want to exclude anyone with our beer. Beer is an inclusive experience, and pretty much everyone can find a beer they like if they have the opportunity to try.
That's really cool.
Thanks.
So if somebody came in here with a Budweiser taste, you could serve them a beer they'd like.
Well, I sure hope so. You know, Budweiser makes some of the best, most consistent beers in the world. So, you know, I would be honored if someone who only drinks Budweiser loves one of our beers as well. But I think they do.
What are some of your most favorite beers right now that are most popular?
Well, that's like asking someone their favorite child or their favorite pet, for example.
Statistically, you know, what from demand from the customer end?
You know, our customer demand splits in two directions. Just like I said, there's something for everyone. Our lighter, more yellow lagers and blonde ales are very popular. And then on the other end of the spectrum, our hazy IPA is called Space Force, probably our number one seller, just because it's, you know, it's a delicious IPA that's a popular style. So like I said, you have to have something for everyone on all sides of the spectrum. My favorite beers, let's see, I always go back to some of the ones we've been brewing for 12, 13 years now. So our Killer Irish Red is a great Irish red style. Our Golden Stout, DeSoto's Folly, it's called, is a beer pun. It's stout flavored, but it's not stout colored. And then I love Space Force, or our IPAs. Our Northwoods IPA is a just standard West Coast IPA, kind of a moderate bitterness and a moderate color and mouthfeel. That's a great drinking beer. I do find myself gravitating towards our seasonals, or I'm giving you very long-winded answers there. The ones I gravitate two lately are usually the newest ones we're making. So, you know, we just came out with a dry hopped West Coast lager. Mm-hmm. We always do some seasonals. We've got a Mexican style lager with lime peel for Cinco de Mayo. That will be delicious. I like the variety just as much as anyone else would.
Are you able to distribute to any of the stores in town?
Well, most of our beer, I would say 98% of our beer by volume, we sell right through the front door to our customers.
But maybe a restaurant? Or something?
Yeah, the little bit we're able to send out, we distribute kegs. Mm-hmm. We send 40 or 50 kegs a week out into the world, and our distributor works around the state of Arkansas. So you might have one of our beers up in Fayetteville or Jonesboro or Little Rock or even down in Texarkana.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, Rose, I'm going to let you go, but before you sign off, where do we go to learn more about your world?
Of course, you can learn more about Superior on Instagram or Facebook. Just look up Superior Bathhouse Brewery or our website, superiorbathhouse.com. And there are two H's in bathhouse. So you'll find us. Just Google that. And my name is Rose Schweikart. I'm the owner here at Superior. And I love talking to Tom Wilmer.
Awesome. Rose, thank you so much for the time. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Little Rock, Arkansas. We'll see you here.
You can do anything, but they offer my blue suede shoes. Rock!
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.